It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hall of Fame coaches, national champions, lottery picks, the best minds in basketball. Welcome into the sidelines with Evan Daniels.
What's up, college basketball fans? Welcome back to the Sidelines Podcast. I'm your host, Evan Daniels, college basketball insider at FS1, as well as the director of basketball recruiting at 24/7 Sports. Today's episode is going to be a full breakdown of the NCAA tournament brackets. I'm going to talk matchups to watch, players to know, and also give out my final four. Before I get to that conversation with my man Conrad Company, I want to make sure that you are subscribed and supporting the Sidelines Podcast. The best way to do that is to shoot over to Apple Podcasts and or your favorite podcast app. Hit the subscribe button for me. I'm also asking if you could leave a rating and a review. Those things are extremely helpful. You can also shoot me a note over on Twitter or Instagram. The handle is at Evan Daniels. Now let's jump to that conversation with Conrad Company.
It's time to go minute with Evan Daniels. Send it in, big fella.
Now I want to bring in my man Conrad Company to talk about the upcoming NCAA tournament, one of the best times of the year. That Thursday of games is one of my favorite days of the year. I'm sure it is for you too.
Oh man, absolutely. This is probably my favorite week of the year, to be honest. I mean, you won't be able to find me anywhere Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. This is just one of those weeks for me.
Yeah, no, me too. I until I moved to Nashville, I always had this tradition in Lexington where I'd go to my breakfast spot, Winchell's. Shout out to Winchell's. I went there for like 10 straight years. But I would go get calm pancakes and watch early games and just have a blast. So I'm fired up for the NCAA tournament. Also fired up for this podcast. We actually getting to do it in person.
Live in LA.
I'm on the Fox lot right now. So excited to be out here.
Yeah, man. And we're going to let the people know at least why you're out here.
Yeah. So I'm Wednesday morning. I'm going to jump on Colin Cowherd's show and then Speak for Yourself as well. So I'm pumped about jumping on those shows on Wednesday to talk a little college hoops.
Big time, man. You got to be tired. After last week, Madison Square Garden, now you're showing up at the Fox lot in LA and you're doing live hits on the herd. Come on, man.
It's been a fun past week and a half. Had a lot going on. Obviously, at the Big East tournament, Keon Brooks' announcement.
Would it be safe to say you're living the dream?
Yeah. This is this type of stuff that I wanted to do.
10-year-old Evan Daniels, man. What do you think you would say about this?
Yes. It's actually crazy. Like, the you know, being in Madison Square Gardens was kind of like surreal. You know, I used to, when I was like 8-9 years old, I would play basketball video games and I would narrate them into a voice recorder.
Yeah.
I'm getting to do exactly what I want to do. So I'm very thankful and blessed for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's give the people what they want a little bit now. How do you think the committee did in this year's seeding process?
You know what? I thought they did a pretty solid job. You know, there was some debate, you know, who should be the number one overall seed. I thought it should be Duke. But there was obviously a pretty heavy Virginia contingent because of where they stood numerically. And obviously they've had a tremendous season. But my thought process on this is Duke at full strength has only lost one game. Their resume compared to Virginia, very close.
Yeah.
As close as it was, Duke beat Virginia twice.
And once without Trey Jones.
So if resumes are that close and we're going back and forth and Duke wins the ACC tournament, I think it makes sense for Duke to be the number one overall seed.
No, I agree completely. Now, do you believe that there is an ACC bias, though, with the ACC now having three of the top four number one seeds?
Well, honestly, I thought the ACC deserved that respect. You know, I know that the Big Ten is tremendous and probably maybe top to bottom, the Big Ten might be the best conference in America. But if your conference as a whole with the upside and teams at the top, the ACC for me.
Yeah, I agree.
I thought all three of those teams deserved number one seeds, you know, especially with the way things came in the end. Like, you know, Virginia's just had some very dominant moments throughout this season. North Carolina, I think, honestly, the beginning, we talked about this on the podcast before, I think with Raph last week, like, I wasn't on North Carolina train at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm saying right now, could you imagine North Carolina being a one seed in this year's tournament without Nazir Little being the player that you thought that he was going
to
be?
No way. No. And you know, credit to Coby White. That dude has just gotten so much better. So yeah, I thought the ACC deserved the three number one seeds. The area that like I think a lot of people, and I saw on social media a lot of people talking about, was Michigan State, Gonzaga. And I actually kind of see it both sides. Like, I'm totally cool with Gonzaga being a one seed.
Yeah.
But also, like, you know, Michigan State, they won their conference. They won their conference tournament. They finished winning 10 of 11. Their quad one wins compared to Gonzaga were 12 and 4 was Michigan State, and Gonzaga was 4-3 in the quad one. Now, Gonzaga didn't lose any quad two, three, or four games, where Michigan State lost two quad two games. And I think, you know, if you're Gonzaga, if you think Gonzaga should be the one, you're saying, well, Michigan State lost to Indiana twice.
Yeah.
So I overall, you know, very small gripes from me. You know, I thought Villanova maybe deserved to be a little higher. They win the Big East Conference. They win the Big Ten Tournament. They get hit with a 6. Obviously, Marquette's in the same league, and they get a 5. But it's all small stuff. I thought overall, like even down to like the teams at the bottom, I thought they did a good job.
Yeah, see, now I think there is a little bit of a recency bias when it comes to them doing the seeding. 5 years ago, we could have never imagined a team like Gonzaga being from the West Coast Conference, being a number one seed at the NCAA tournament. 5 years ago, Villanova is probably not a one seed consistently. And now Michigan State, and this goes to part of recency bias too, the Big Ten hasn't won a national championship in going on 18 years since 2000. 18 years, actually, 19 years. And I think that has a part to do with it as well.
I find it hard to believe that the committee like really takes that into account. Like, I feel like it's a new year, new slate.
Oh, new year, new me, huh? You think that's how the committee thinks? I don't know, man.
I'm not a new year, new me guy, but maybe it improved me.
No, well, see, and I look at it too. Like, I think Nevada got snubbed. Nevada was a top 10 team all season. And, you know, I thought in their conference tournament, they were looking ahead to Utah State after they got in that altercation at the end of the game where fans were rushing the court. And I think they were fired up. They were looking ahead. People forget. San Diego State upset Nevada a couple weeks beforehand, beat them again in the conference tournament. And for them to get a 7 seed?
Yeah, I hear you. I think, like, if you're on the other side of it, you're saying, you know, they lost 3 of their last 8.
Yeah.
They have 2 quad 3 losses and a quad 2 loss. Their net is 23. You know, the net and how it factored into this, I'm still a little confused, honestly, because you could go through the net and like, NC State had a pretty high net, and they didn't make the tournament. They were 33.
Yeah. Net. But they also scored, what, 24 points in a basketball game?
Right. But, like, for example, Belmont's 47. So, like, there's just, you know, I don't know how much they're actually taking the net into account. And don't get me wrong, I thought Belmont deserved to be in the field. I'm just more or less curious on how much that really factored in. Were there any teams you thought got snubbed?
I wouldn't say so much as being actually snubbed. I mean, I don't think that the Pac-12 deserved to have 2 teams in the tournament, and I think that a lot of people would agree with me. Exactly. I don't think Oregon makes it.
Well, you know, Arizona State would have made it.
Yeah, well, they're in a play-in game, though, too, as well.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, they still have to play a game and to get in, and, I mean, the Pac-12 this year was just, it was a complete anomaly of just, they were not a good conference at all. I don't think Oregon technically should have made it. Washington was starting to falter down the stretch.
But that's part of the deal. You win your conference tournament, you get in.
Nope, that is. That's how you punch a ticket. That's for sure.
There were, like, a couple other, you know, smaller conference teams, especially from the SoCon, I would have liked to see in the dance. I don't know who you'd take out necessarily. You know, I thought UNC Greensboro and Furman from the SoCon, Lipscomb, they had, you know, a pretty strong case. Lipscomb lost to Belmont twice, so that's why Belmont gets in over them. You know, I was talking to Wes Miller earlier in the week, the UNC Greensboro coach, and, you know, he said to me, we didn't have one loss outside of a quad one. And, you know, they've only lost to 4 teams this year, LSU, Kentucky, Furman all on the road, and then Wofford, who we know is very good. They lost to Wofford 3 times, including in the conference tournament. And truthfully, if you end that game with 5 minutes left, they're going to the tournament. And SoCon gets 2 in because Wofford probably gets an at-large bid. But all that said, I thought the committee did a pretty good job. You know, this is a group that probably gets quite a bit of hassle and hate in their day. I thought they deserve some respect for this. I thought they did a good job.
Yeah, and overall, I think they did a good job as well. But let's move on a little bit to let's look at some matchups. All right, so Let's go one for one. You give me your favorite matchup, and I'll give you mine back. I know you have a couple of them. Let's start with our top three matchups to watch.
Yeah, it has to start with John Morant and Marcus Howard. I think when the bracket came out, that's the one that like jumped to my mind as soon as I saw it. Like, you know, we've got the best point guard prospect in college basketball, and John Morant, the size, the length, the athleticism, the feel, the vision, the passing, the creativity against a guy you could make a case as the best point guard in college basketball.
The best scoring point guard, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And there's some other guys you could throw in there, like Cassius Winston. I don't want to leave him out. But Marcus Howard's ability to score, he's also really good with the live dribble and creating shot opportunities. He can really shoot. This point guard matchup is going to be a lot of fun to watch, and they're obviously very different. Like, Ja Morant has got good size and length and athleticism, where Marcus Howard beats you with his skill and his long-range shooting and his toughness. Like, these are two different makeup of point guards, and two of arguably the best ones in college basketball. So I'm fired up for that matchup. That's a matchup I would pay to go watch.
Okay. Well, the first one I've been looking at, and this instantly stood out to me because I have been looking at Wofford as someone that I think could make a little run in the tournament. Call him a sleeper, call him whatever you want. But my matchup would be Fletcher McGee against Miles Powell, which is Wofford against Seton Hall. McGee is 6'4", 200 pounds, combo guard. Powell, 6'2", 195. Powell can fill up a box score. I mean, he can score points, and he can score them in bunches. Both of them are averaging 20 points a game. They both can create their own shots and knock down deep three balls. I mean, I think McGee shot, I think it was something over like 300 and something threes this year. I mean, he puts them up.
He's hit 148 threes this year.
Yeah, he shoots a lot of them, and you'll see
44%
that.
44% clip.
And that's what I'm saying. And down the stretch in this game, both of them are going to be their go-to guys.
Yep.
So that's my matchup that I'm looking really forward to in the first round.
Powell was awesome in the Big East tournament, too.
Yeah, he gets buckets.
Yep. No, he's a bucket, as the kids say. my third matchup that I'm looking forward to isn't a player matchup. It's Nate Oates at Buffalo versus what I think will be Bobby Hurley in Arizona State. Now, Arizona State's got to get through the playing game when they play St. John's, but keep in mind that Nate Oates coached under Bobby Hurley at Buffalo. Bobby Hurley goes to Arizona State. Nate Oates takes over at Buffalo. Buffalo has been tremendous this season. CJ Massenburg, just a loaded team. Jeremy Harris. So it's a mentor situation. Bobby Hurley, Nate Oates. And I think that would be a really fun game. Two fun basketball teams to watch. Fast paced, a lot of scoring. Now, obviously, Arizona State's got to get through the first four. But I think that, I think it's interesting is like the storylines that come out in the NCAA tournament. They say they don't pay attention to storylines, but like this is kind of a unique one.
Let's move on to three guys you need to know for the tournament. We talked about some of the players, but those are like more big name players that you would know, obviously the John Morants, the Marcus Howards. Now, give me three guys going into the tournament. If I haven't watched college basketball this year, three guys to watch in the opening round.
Well, I'm going to stick with John Morant. Like, I think that's an obvious one. I think he's got a chance to be the number two pick in the draft, which we're going to get into here in a little bit. Just a dynamic point guard. If you watch, highlight shows or, you know, college basketball from a periphery, you've probably seen, like, John Morant dunking.
But, which is probably everything that everyone's seen on the internet.
Right. But, like, Ja Morant is way more than a dunker.
Oh, yeah.
It's his, like, vision and his creativity with the ball and his ability to distribute with both hands. His upside. Like, there's a lot to him. And he impacts the game in so many ways. I think, obviously, he's at Murray State. Like, I think he's an awesome player. I also think that he's going against a tough team in Marquette, so I don't know that they win that game. I'm actually picking Marquette, but like, that's must-see TV. You need to go watch Ja Morant if you haven't seen him play.
No, I got you. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense, and that game is going to be a tremendous game as well. I mean, Murray State, probably better than a 12 seed. I mean, if you look at some of the other 12 seeds, they're probably one of the better, highly seeded teams. But yeah, give me your next guy to know.
Yeah, my next guy is Justin Robinson. And he's probably fairly well known. He's had a really good season in the ACC, but he did get hurt in late January and didn't play for Virginia Tech in February or March. He's going to come back to the NCAA tournament. I think he's one of the most underrated players in the entire country. I've actually talked about him on this podcast before. Averaging nearly 14 points a game, over 5 assists, shooting at a 41% clip. With him on the court, you can make a case that Virginia Tech's backcourt of him, And Nickeil Alexander-Walker are as good of a perimeter as there is in the country.
And he wasn't around when Virginia Tech beat Duke either.
He was not. He was not. And I think Justin Robinson is just so creative with the basketball. He's a tremendous passer, can obviously score it. But he's kind of the straw that stirs that drink.
No, I would agree with that. And then you got one more guy for me.
Yeah, the other guy we actually kind of touched on already, and that's Fletcher McGee.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, the Wofford train is rolling right now.
It is.
And Fletcher McGee is the conductor on said train. And
well, him and Storm Murphy.
Yeah, Storm. I mean,
the best name backcourt in all of basketball.
That is a tremendous name, Storm Murphy. I wish my name was Storm. just playing. But 20 points a game, nearly 44% from three, hit 148 three-pointers this season, 151 three-pointers last season. Think about that. In two seasons. Well, he's going to go over 300.
Yeah,
you know, with this game, surely he hits a couple.
I'm sure.
So I think those are three names to kind of pay attention to as we head into the NCAA tournament.
Oh yeah, yeah. All right. Well, now let's move on to teams. Now you have a sleeper. I have a couple sleepers. I'll let you go off first.
Yeah. So I like this Belmont team that Rick Byrd has, and they're playing in the first four. So they're going to have to get out of the first four. And Rick Byrd has actually never won an NCAA game. He's 0-7 in the NCAA tournament.
Sounds like a great sleeper, Evan.
Yeah. So I actually think they could win multiple games in the NCAA tournament.
How far are they going?
I put them in my Sweet 16. Now, LSU could overwhelm them athletically. Yeah. But LSU also has a tough matchup against Yale. And I actually loved LSU until they lost their coach. You know, Will Wade's not on the sidelines. I think you take your head coach off a team. There's a big
Well, this
difference.
Late in the season,
yeah.
Too.
Now, LSU could overwhelm them with athleticism. You know, guys like Emmett Williams, who's a pogo stick, Naz Reid. You know, Belmont's going to have trouble matching up with them from a size standpoint. But what I love about Belmont, and I think a lot of people, if you follow college basketball on the periphery, know of Dylan Windler. He's got a chance to be a second-round pick in the NBA draft. He's 6'7". He can really shoot the basketball. He's a southpaw. Shoots it at above a 40% clip from three. And he's a tremendous rebounder for a wing. Tremendous rebounder. And he's actually another guy that I would say, like, you need to watch in the NCAA tournament. But they're not just Dylan Windler. They've got a really good passing big man. They've got two guards that I think are very good. They've got a senior in Kevin McClain that's fast and athletic that can really drive it. He'll guard. He gets out in transition. And then they have a freshman point guard named Grayson Murphy that's averaging over 6 assists a game, a really good passer, distributor, kind of runs the show. So I like the Belmont team. I think they've got a chance to win a game or two.
Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. While their brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all your profits. Plus, there is no account minimum deposit needed to get started, so you can start investing at any level. The simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. View easy-to-understand charts and market data, and place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. You can also view stock collections such as 100 most popular. With Robinhood, you can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio, discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so you can never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving listeners of The Sidelines a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio. Sign up at sidelines.robinhood.com. That's sidelines.robinhood.com.
No, they're a great team to like, and I'm going to stick along the same line. I love this Wofford team. Wofford is 29-4. They played a really hard schedule at the start of the year. They lost at Kansas. They played a lot of really good competition, and this is what really makes me like them a lot. They're 18-0 in their conference, no losses in the conference, and they finished the season on a 20-game win streak. And we already mentioned it. They have a legit scorer, McGee. Storm Murphy is the one that serves a drink on that team, and I honestly think Wofford could end up being a Sweet 16 on my end.
Well, they have certainly have the offensive firepower. I think their first matchup is tough, though.
Yeah.
Like Seton Hall, like you were talking about Miles Powell. If that dude gets rolling, it's tough.
With Seton Hall, I just never know what I'm going to get, though. I don't know if they're going to come out and they're going to roll people or if they're right. going to crumble down the stretch.
They've been a little inconsistent. I actually think Kevin Willard has done a tremendous job with that team, though. They beat Kentucky earlier in the season.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. They've been a tad up and down. But who knows? Now, I will say this. I don't think either of those teams are getting past Kentucky.
Well, I mean, getting past Kentucky is also a very difficult thing to do.
Yeah.
So, but no, at the same time, we'll see how it goes. Then I have another one for you, even though before the podcast, Evan told me that they're not really a sleeper. But give me Cincinnati. I know Cincinnati is 20-6 this year. They have a legit player in Jerron Cumberland, averaging almost 19 points a game. He's very clutch. And basically, Cincinnati is playing their first two games at home. If they can get out of the first round, they're playing in Columbus, yep. which is about 90 minutes north of Cincinnati. That's going to be a home game, and they would have, I'm assuming, Tennessee in the second round. Cincinnati could make a legitimate run Columbus.
If Cincinnati and Tennessee play, that's going to be a dogfight.
Yeah.
The thing you always know about Cincinnati is they bring toughness and physicality.
Oh, yeah.
Mick Cronin, he coaches tough kids. And, you know, they played Houston three times this year and got beat the first two. He was pissed off after the second one and called his whole team out. It's like, I like Mick Cronin.
He's a great coach.
I think he can really coach. And, you know, they beat Houston, who I think is a very good team, by a dozen in the AAC conference tournament. They won their last three games. They beat SMU, Wichita State, and Houston. And they've got a dynamic scorer in Jerron Cumberland. And some guards that can go, like Kane Broome and Justin Jennifer. So I'm on board. I think Cincinnati is a really good team.
I hear you. And like I said, for me, it's you get two home games. How often do you get two home games?
No question. Number two in the country in steals, and number four in offensive rebounding percentage.
All right. Now we're going to move on a little bit from the smaller schools, or so much the sleepers.
We can't call Cincinnati a smaller school. Well. I can't let that pass.
All right. Well, let's move on to your final four teams. I know that they've changed a couple times throughout the year, obviously, with, I think, Kansas losing a couple really good players. I know you had them in your preseason, but with the loss of Vic and then them also losing Azubuike. Yeah, Vic and Azubuike, losing both of them. You can't lose them and still be expected to be a Final Four team. Who's your updated Final Four teams now that you've seen the bracket?
Yeah, my updated Final Four, out of the East, I'm going with Duke knocking off Michigan State in what I think would be a tremendous game in the Elite Eight. I think Michigan State's headed in the right direction despite the injuries they've had throughout the year. I think Tom Izzo's done a tremendous job. I just think Duke is that good. I think Duke is the best team in the country. I think they have the most talent in the country. I think they have the most upside in the country. Therefore, I think they're going to make the Final Four. Coming out of the South, I've got Virginia over Villanova in my Elite Eight. I think Villanova made some strides the past couple weeks. And from talking to Jay Wright this past Tuesday and then again on Thursday, one of the things that he brought up to me was, if we're going to reach our full potential and make like a postseason run, I need somebody else other than Eric Paschal and Phil Booth to step up. And he said it basically has to be Con Gillespie or Jermaine Samuels. Well, they both did that in the Big East tournament. Jermaine Samuels had some really nice moments in the Big East tournament. Colin Gillespie stepped up at times in the Big East tournament. And another guy, Sadiq Bey, the freshman, he had a really good championship game. In each of those games in the Big East tournament, somebody for Villanova stepped up. I know I just went off on a tangent, but... So I got Villanova in the Elite Eight against Virginia, and then I've got Virginia going to the Final Four. I think this is a different Virginia team than last year. I don't think it's a team that gets beat by a 16 seed.
Yeah.
I think that they're motivated. Actually, I was on Twitter. This was a day or two before the brackets came out, and Kyle Guy retweeted something about UMBC beating Virginia. And like you can just tell that they're using that as motivation.
Oh, yeah.
You remember DeAndre Hunter didn't play.
Mm-hmm.
They got him back. Top 5 to 10 pick.
Yep.
Can defend your best player. He's athletic. He can shoot. They've got offensive firepower in Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome. They've got a pogo stick down low and Mamadi Diakite. And, you know, Jay Huff coming off the bench. Like, Braxton Key.
Salt's a pretty good post defender.
Yeah. I'm on the Virginia train. I think that they make it to the Final Four. In the Midwest... Best game of the tournament, Kentucky, North Carolina in the Elite Eight. I've got Kentucky moving on to the Final Four. But a North Carolina, Kentucky Elite Eight would be a lot of fun to watch. And I mentioned it earlier, like I think Carolina is rolling right now. And it wouldn't surprise me to see them beat Kentucky. I just think It kind of hurts me that those two are in the same region, because I think those were like maybe outside of Duke, who I've been pretty adamant about how much I liked. Like, I thought those were the two teams for me. Like, I would have almost said, like, give me Duke, Kentucky, and Carolina. You can have the field. So, anyways, I've got Kentucky knocking off North Carolina in Elite Eight, but, man, that would be a tremendous game. And then the West, which is probably where I'm maybe the most confused. I've got Gonzaga knocking off Marquette in the Sweet 16 and Texas Tech knocking off Michigan in the Sweet 16. So Gonzaga and Texas Tech playing in the West Regional and Texas Tech moving on. Really impressed with Chris Beard and impressed with them from a defensive standpoint. They're the per KenPom number one defensive team in the country. They're number two effective field goal percentage defense, 42.8. They turn guys over, 11th in the country. They hold teams to record lows shooting the three, 30. They hold teams to 30% shooting three. I could go down the list. Their defensive numbers are absurd.
And?
They're the 61st best three-point shooting team in the country. They've also got a lottery pick, which I think is where you were going.
Yeah, you know where I was going, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's where you were going. Jerry Culver is awesome. The grad transfer, Matt Mooney, can play. So can Mr. Francis. Mm-hmm. I like Texas Tech. So, am I giving my champion, or are we like, you want to go first, and then we'll come back to the Final Four?
Well, I'll go quick, because, okay. I mean, Duke, obviously, I think is by far the favorite to make it to the Final Four, if not win the championship. Talking about the North Carolina-Kentucky game, I have North Carolina winning that game, and I think Coby White is going to be a huge reason why. He's really been coming on late, and he has been actually this might sound weird, all right? I always thought he was 5'10", 5'11", the way he looked when I was watching him play. I did not realize that he was 6'5". He has legitimate NBA size, and he is just – he's a blur. He gets around people, and he finishes.
So fast.
Yeah.
You're going to be fastest in a Carolina uniform since Ty Lawson. I don't know. Yeah, he's got to be.
Yeah, well, Ty Lawson was – I mean, you're talking about speed. My goodness. That guy was just up and down the floor.
I think – not to go on a total tangent, but, like, Coby White's development this year is, like, I think he's, like, knocking on the door of lottery. Now, I don't think he's a pure point guard. I think he's more of a combo. But, honestly, if you look at the NBA, most of these dudes are combos.
Well, and could you imagine if Nazir Little would have stepped up and been the player that they thought that they were getting as well? I mean, this North Carolina team would be loaded. And then my final team, and we both agree on Texas Tech somehow, which probably means they're going to lose in the first couple rounds.
You never know in these deals. Like, my bracket's going to be up in flames on Friday night.
Everybody's usually is, so it's okay. You're not in the boat alone. But yeah, give me your champion, and I already know mine. I'm assuming the same as yours.
I've got Duke and Texas Tech on one side, Virginia and Kentucky on the other, and I've got the season ending the way the season started. Duke versus Kentucky. I've got Duke winning, but Kentucky is an entirely different team than they were when they started the season, and I think it's going to be a really close game, and I've got Duke winning. But I do want to say, like, the development of Kentucky's team, much like North Carolina's, has been pretty impressive, like progressively getting better. Their point guard play has really improved with Ashton Hagans running the show, not only from a distribution standpoint, but really disrupts things defensively. Tyler Hero keeps getting better. Keldon Johnson's made his plays. And PJ Washington has been a first-team All-American the last half of the season. So I like Kentucky against Duke. Duke, we've talked about it. If they're healthy, I think they're the best team. We'll see what happens with Marquise Bolden. I talked to a source close to the program and still not for sure yet when he's coming back.
Yeah.
I can't imagine he doesn't. But I think that obviously the most, the big thing for them is Zion's back, because he changes things for them every facet of the game.
Let's talk about that real quick.
Okay.
Now, Zion was out. They lost three games in a row.
Yep.
And then he comes back. Have you seen another player like him that has this impact on already a very talented team?
My gosh. I was trying to think about this yesterday. I was actually talking to a bunch of my buddies about it. Like, who is he the most dominant player since? And I came up with Anthony Davis. You know, numbers and how they impact the game are a little different.
Yeah.
But, gosh, like, it is so dominant. And I asked one of the coaches at Duke about, you know, what is it about him that changes things for them defensively? Because they told me, like, defensively is where it's really a big deal. And obviously he's a rim protector and a dynamic rebounder. But, like, when he's in the game, defensively they are just different.
He has such good anticipation. I mean, like, I know we don't compare people on this podcast,
right?
But he has that LeBron level anticipation. When like he's playing lanes and when people know he's behind him for swatting shots,
right?
That's the only other player I've seen that where people are like, all right. And then as soon as he breaks on the go,
yep,
no one is going to get close to him, yep, ever.
Now, and I just looked up Anthony Davis' stats. So he averaged 14 a game with a little over 10 rebounds, and blocks were 4.7. So obviously those are tremendous numbers. Situations are different. At,
yeah,
Duke, like they're, you know, when they're fully healthy, they're playing 6-7 dudes. He never gets off the court. And they're just different. But I was just trying to come up with, you know, who is he the most dominant since? And I think that's it. But just also in the AC tournament against Florida State, transition.
Yeah.
Silly. That pass he made. You know, I tweeted out about, you know, that ridiculous left-handed pass, and everybody's tweeting at me, oh, well, he's left-handed. Well, of course, I know he's left-handed, but it doesn't make the pass any less impressive.
Yeah.
Man, I didn't see this coming in this way. Like, I knew he was good. I had no idea he was this good. And he is just a joy to watch, too. Well,
I mean, even until a month and a half ago, me and you both were still on the RJ Barrett for number one overall pick. And it's very rare, if not extremely rare, to find a kid that when you're watching him play, he doesn't always have the ball in his hands, yet he's the go-to guy to get a bucket for you if you need. I mean, RJ Barrett is such a scorer, too. I think that he's kind of got left in the dust in this a little bit just because he's still going to be a top three pick.
Right.
And RJ Barrett is so good, but when you watch Zion, I mean, he's out here going 14 for 14 with 14 rebounds. I mean, 29 points, 14 rebounds, a couple steals, a couple blocks. I mean, he really is miraculous.
Yep. No, he's been awesome.
And now, speaking of RJ Barrett, do you think there's any chance that Ja Morant, if he has a good tournament, can end up passing RJ Barrett for the number two overall pick?
I actually think he might have.
Yeah.
Already.
Really?
It's close. And you know that I really like RJ Barrett. I think I'm disappointed with his 3-point shooting a little. You know, at the beginning of the season, I thought he had made some positive steps, and mm-hmm, it's just been kind of a slow decline from a shooting standpoint. I don't know how worried I am about that yet, though, because I know he's an elite worker, and I know in the offseason he's going to spend a lot of time on it, and I think he'll be a respectable shooter. All that said, I think it's really just more how impressed I've been with Ja Morant.
Yeah, he's been balling.
And, yeah, that's the best way to put it. And he impacts the game on all fronts. I do think like he's going to have to learn to stay more engaged defensively. And obviously, he's going to have to get stronger, and that'll come. But, like, the attributes there with his court vision, his ability to see the game, coming off ball screens, the way he passes, what he sees. Like, he sees stuff that his teammates don't see. Like he'll pass it, and the teammates say, oh, that's for me. And it's just and then when you couple, like, the size, the length, and the, you know, the plus 43-inch vertical, like, wow.
Yeah.
So as of today, I would go Zion 1, Ja Morant 2, RJ Barrett 3.
Yeah, well, and then,
and
this,
then it gets jumbled.
Well, this is a little bit of an NBA question, too. I mean, I couldn't imagine what Ja Morant would look like in the Suns jersey playing next to Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton.
Right.
I mean, that's unreal as far as like just talent goes and what potential could be. Do you think, I mean, with the Cavaliers being up there in the top three picks as well, same with the Knicks, could Colin Sexton move over and be a 2 and play next to Ja Morant? Or they both need the ball in their hands too much?
I mean, you could make it work, but they're both at best with the ball in their hands.
All right, and last but not least, let's finish out with what player in the tournament has the most to gain from a strong NCAA tournament? Who can really dive up those draft boards if they can produce in this tournament?
So I have 2.
All right.
I'm going to start with Tyler Hero.
You think he's going pro this year?
Gone. I will be shocked if he's back at Kentucky next year.
Huh.
I think he's gone. He has progressively gotten better this year. You know what bothers me?
Hit me with it.
Everyone that just assumed he's a catch and shoot guy.
He's really good off the dribble. But I understand it.
You know why?
I of course I know why.
But he's a scorer.
Yeah, he is.
Now, can he shoot? Yes. He's much more of a scorer than like I would never label him as a shooter.
He can create his own shot very easily.
Yeah, he's really good. Like when Kentucky runs what they call two circle, and him him being able to use the dribble to get in the lane and drop in floaters, his touch shots, he can pull up. I think he shoots it really well on the move.
That honestly has surprised me the most about his game, is that how fluent he is once he gets in the paint. Because you look at him, I know he's 6'5", but physically he's not very big.
I love his cocky, like, swagger. It's not arrogance.
No, he has the juice. Sure.
The juice. Maybe that's the way to put it. The swag. Like, I love it. I think he's coming out. But that's besides the point. I think that with a good tournament, he can continue to move up. And maybe he goes in the top 20 range in some capacity. I just think when you're 6'5 and can shoot the ball the way he can, you're skilled the way he can, you have kind of a little something extra to you. And the truth is like, I think he's going to be a better shooter than he is now. Like, he started off pretty cold. And he's, like, slowly built his way up from a three-point line. You know, he's up to about 37%. He's hit 57 threes. But he was a little cold coming out of the gate.
I think it was just his confidence. I think that he was finally coming from Wisconsin. He was the big fish in the small pond, and then he went from being the small fish in the big pond. And he found out, you know what? I can hoop with these guys. Give me the big dogs, and I'm going to get buckets.
There's the thing about him, though. You're probably right because of how Kentucky started the season. You know, getting smacked like that. Like, that's if you're one of those freshmen, you're like, holy crap.
18 years old, man.
What just happened? But confidence is never something I've really worried about Tyler. But probably those first couple games, maybe it hurt him a little. And once he, like, had a game where he was making shots, like, he got it rolling. The other guy that I think could really help them in the NCAA tournaments, we've seen this story before, is Trey Jones. And obviously his brother Tyus, the reason, you know, he went pro was because he helped lead that Duke team to a national championship and was tremendous along the way. I've said this a couple times. Zion is Duke's best player. I think Trey could be their most important, like, when they're healthy, when everybody's playing, just because of his ability to facilitate and then his ability to really disrupt the opposition from a defensive standpoint.
His on-ball defense is on point.
Yeah. You know, him and Ashton Hagans are two of the best on-ball defenders in the country, and they're freshmen. But I think Trey could really help himself. Like, I think he's probably right on that line of being maybe a top 20 pick. You know, he had, like, coming down the stretch, he had a little struggles. But I think their team in general, just Zion not there. Trey's just so much better when Zion's there, obviously. But a little over 9 points, over 5 assists a game. He doesn't turn the ball over, and he really defends. So I think that Tyler Hero and Trey Jones with good NCAA tournaments, and I think it's two teams, obviously, that I think are going to go pretty far, so they'll be playing, could really help themselves.
Yeah, now let me know how you feel about this. Now, Jarrett Culver, Big 12 Player of the Year, I think he's really made strides as far as progression goes, but I've seen him, it's so weird because I've seen him as a top 5 pick, and I've seen him as like a mid-20s pick. Now, well, I think at this point, the mid-20s stuff is done with. He's going to be a top 15, top 10 pick. I mean, he averaged 18.5, 6.3 rebounds, almost 4 assists a game, shooting 59%. I think his three-point game needs a little bit of work. I mean, he only shot 32% this year.
He was 38 last year.
Yeah, and I guess that's what I mean, is that he's regressed a little bit in the three-point shooting, but I also believe it's because he's been getting more volume.
Mm-hmm. He's got to take tougher shots, too.
Do you see him going in the top 5, top 10?
I think he's in the top 10 probably right now. He's in that range. I'm with you. The top 25 stuff is probably done. I will say, like, this draft is weird, and it's also bad, which we've discussed on here before, but I think outside of, like, your top tier, that everything is really jumbled. Like, I think everybody's, like, I think the scouting, the NBA scouting offices are going to be different, team by team, like, drastically different than maybe we've seen in the past. But to answer your question, big fan of Jarrett Culver, consistently gotten better. You know, I remember him from when he was a senior in high school. And he was kind of this, like, late bloomer, long, wiry body, lean. He could score it, but he didn't shoot it great, and had athletic ability. And then he went to Texas Tech his first year. He outperforms what anybody thought could happen, and then he's been really good this year.
Yeah, I mean, offensively, I mean, he seems to be playing really well, but we go back to Texas Tech and that crispier defense. I mean, you learn to play defense in that system. You learn to play it very technically sound. And I think when you get to the NBA level, to be able to guard, he can probably guard 1 through 3, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
And I think that'll end up being very good for him. So hopefully he can get up there in that top 10.
Yeah. No, I'm on board with Jarrett Culver. I like it. Dude, this has been fun.
Yeah, man. I always love having you out in LA, man.
I'm glad we got to do this in person, and I'm fired up for the NCAA tournament. I'm actually going to Vegas Of course
you are, man. You live the dream.
Yeah, I'm pumped. I'm going out there with four buddies, and we're going to watch ball for 4 days and eat steak for 4 days.
We'll enjoy it, man.
Yeah, I will. Dude, thanks for jumping off.
This is Tom Izzo.
Michigan State is headed to the Final Four.
And you can leave it to Cleve.
And he's running out onto the floor.
He has reinstated the magic at Michigan State.
You're listening to The Sidelines with Evan Daniels.
That was Conrad Company. Enjoyed that discussion. Before I let you guys go, I want to make sure that you are subscribed and supporting the Sidelines podcast. The best way to do that is to go to Apple Podcasts and or your favorite podcast app. Hit the subscribe button for me. I'm also asking that you would leave a rating and a review. Would love 5 stars, but just give me your honest feedback and opinion. Would also love to know what you think. You can hit me on Twitter or Instagram. The handle is @EvanDaniels. As always, thanks for listening and have a great week.